I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet, I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Orla.
And I'm Andrea. Coming up on today's show, number one New York Times bestselling author Kathy Reichs will join us to discuss her new book, Bone Hacker. I'm very, very, very much looking forward to this. And we'll take a closer look at single life and a group of people who are choosing to live happily and purposely outside of traditional relationships with Dr. Peter McGraw, whose new book is Solo, Building a Remarkable Life on Your Own.
Yes, that does sound very interesting. Looking forward to that one. But first, March is here, Andrea. We are turning the corner. We are turning that corner.
Indeed.
When it gets to March, I start to get a bit more excited.
Me too, but also because my birthday's in March, right? So that's
yes,
very...
Yes, that's true. That's true. Happy birthday,
by the way.
Happy birthday.
A few more days to go,
well,
but thank you.
Yes, yes. And not a day over 21, right, darling?
100%.
Well, spring break is upon us for many kids across the province. So if you're looking for some fun ideas of what to do this week and beyond, look no further. Joining us now is the queen of family activities here in Montreal, Lauren Krakauer, who has a fantastic blog called midnightmom.ca. If ever you're wondering what to do with the kids, what should we do? The first thing you should think about is going on to Lauren's website, because everything is listed there, and that's at midnightmom.ca. Welcome back, Lauren.
Hi. There's a lot going on in March.
Yes, and it's spring break, so we need there to be a lot going on. So let's kick off with what's happening at Pointe à Calière, the museum in Old Montreal.
Yeah, sure. So they're actually hosting special activities for spring break. The activities run through to the 9th of the month, and every day between 11 a.m. and 4 p.m. you can go and participate in a bunch of activities. They have two big exhibits that are on now, one about the St. Lawrence River and one about pirates. So they've kind of used that as inspiration for a bunch of activities, including sports tournaments, fishing, architectural tours. They're going to have a VR simulator. They're going to have snacks. They often do like a lot of cooking, old-fashioned type of things. So they're going to have old-fashioned donuts. So they have a daily schedule. You can see, you know, all the different activities that are taking place throughout the day. It's pretty consistent among all the days. So pick a day, head down to Old Montreal and get some of those great activities going on. And best part is they're free, which we love.
Yes, we do love that. And tell us what's going on at Place des Arts over spring break.
Yeah, Place des Arts is also hosting a bunch of activities from March 6th to 9th. They're also free. You can consult the schedule, but there's storytelling, which will be primarily in French. There's going to be circus workshops. There's going to be an origami workshop, one that I love. There's going to be a baking session where kids can come in and bake. And then the organization La Table des Chefs is going to take whatever is baked and bring it to some of the homeless shelters in the city. So that's a really nice particular workshop that's taking place there.
You know what, Lauren? My kids absolutely love going to Indigo, going to the bookshop. And even though it might not sound like the most exciting day, once they get there and they get immersed and buried in all the different aisles of different books, I think it's a fabulous afternoon out. Tell us about what's next on your list for Indigo.
Sure. So Indigo and Kohl's, they always have a really, really strong spring break program. They have a theme day every day of the week, which is amazing. So there's something for everybody. You can consult their website to see which location is closest to you. But I know that the West Island one definitely has a lot going on. So on Monday of spring break, they're going to have Lego. Tuesday, they're going to have Dog Man, the book series. Wednesday, they're going to have a baking session with the brand Klutz. Thursdays for the little ones is Bluey. And then Friday is Hot Wheels and Barbie. So there's really something for everything. Yeah. And they're shorter sessions. They're usually about an hour or so. But like you said, Orla, the bookstore is just a great place to go for the kids to check out books. They have games. You might end up spending some money, but you get a free activity out of it. And then, you know, you can buy them another activity to bring home and do, whether it's a craft or a science project or a book to read.
That's awesome. You're listening to Now Trending. I'm Andrea, along with Orla. And we are speaking with Lauren Krakauer from the popular blog MidnightMom.ca about some of the exciting things going on in and around town this month. So, you know, after spring break, Lauren, or for people like me who have to deal with a 2-week spring break, I know there's still a lot going on in the city. Tell us about International Gymnics. Am I saying that properly?
Yeah. So that's a women's gymnastics competition that's coming to Montreal. It's taking place March 6th to 10th at the Centre Claude Robillard, and you can go and you can watch the gymnasts perform. So you can look at the schedule, see, you know, what kind of gymnastics you want your kids to watch. It's kids for under five are free, and then it's quite reasonable for adults and children as well. And they're having one special day on March 6th, which is still during spring break for most people, and it's a behind-the-scenes day where you can go and you can see training sessions, you can get photos and autographs with the gymnasts. So if you have a gymnastics enthusiast, this is a really fun opportunity to go out and see some professionals do their thing.
Wow, that sounds really, really cool. And another thing on your list here is Cabane Panache. What exactly is that?
Yeah, this one is one of my favorites. It takes place every year at Promenade Wellington. It's now in its 12th year, and it's happening March 21st to 24th. And it's basically like an urban sugar shack, but it's so much more than a sugar shack. It's really a weekend-long event where there's all different kinds of activities for adults and children alike. They have things like curling and wood cutting and dancing. They even have a mullet workshop, which I find super funny. I think you could go get your hair cut by one of the barbers in Verdun and get a mullet. There's a hot sauce competition. Like, there's all kinds of things. But they do have a special section put on by Desjardins. It's a family area. So they're going to have all kinds of outdoor games, and they're going to have maple taffy on the snow. So if you can't get to the Sugar Shack comes to the city, but with so many fun different activities.
Oh my gosh. My 9-year-old has been rocking a mullet now for the better part of the school year, much to my dismay. I mean, he loves it, but that might be interesting for him. The World Figure Skating Championships are coming to town.
Yeah, this is a big deal. They've selected Montreal to host these at the Bell Centre. It's going to take place March 18th to 24th, and it's our second time hosting. So, you know, if you haven't had a chance to see professional figure skaters, it's a great time to go out. It does come with a price tag based on the type of show that you select. So there's going to be pairs, women's, men's, dance. But if you have a figure skater or somebody who loves it, it's really a great opportunity to see high caliber skaters on the ice here in Montreal.
Now, Lauren, you have an outdoor adventure show going on, which sounds very exciting. Tell us more about that one.
Yeah, that one's taking place at Palais des Congrès, March 23rd to 24th. And it's really for anybody who's looking to plan an outdoor adventure, plan travel. They're going to have all kinds of different booths, you know, whether you want to travel in Quebec or internationally or camping or scuba diving. They really have something for everyone, including the kids. And they have, first of all, kids under 11 are free, which is great. But they also give them an activity to do while there where they have a scavenger hunt. Each child will get a special passport. They can collect stamps at some of the various booths and then get a big prize at the end. So, you know, if the parents are looking to plan some travel and want to get some more information, bring the kids along and they'll get entertained at the same time.
Very cool. And finally, Quinn Farm Easter egg hunt.
Yeah, it's crazy, but Easter is going to come up at the end of the month. And Quinn Farm is, you know, one of those great places to go and get in the holiday spirit. So beginning March 29th through to April on the long weekend, they're going to be hosting their Easter egg hunt. You can just go to the farm and visit, but if you want to participate, there's a small additional fee to do so. And they're going to have the eggs hiding in all types of great places. This is one that fills up really quickly. So while it is the beginning of the month, I would definitely hop on the site and see if you can get a reservation now for a specific time and a specific day when you want to do that egg hunt.
Yeah, we did that last year, actually. The weather was great, thank goodness, because I don't know how fun it would be if it was pouring with rain. But it was so much fun to get out in the fresh air, be on the farm, see the farm animals, hunt for the eggs. It was great fun, actually. Love going to Quinn Farm. Lauren, as always, thank you so much. You have a fantastic blog and your website, midnightmom.ca. You are just so amazing. Whenever there is time where we need to fill and do an activity. Your website gives us so many great ideas.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. And hopefully it will make spring break, if you're taking a little time at home, a little bit more fun.
100%. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you.
Coming up, number one New York Times best-selling author Kathy Reichs joins us. But first, let's take a look at the roads.
Welcome back. I'm Andrea, along with Orla. Number one, New York Times bestselling author Kathy Reichs' books have sold over a million copies in Canada alone. They've been translated into 30 languages, and they inspired the television series Bones. Her 22nd high-stakes thriller featuring her beloved main character, forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan, The Bone Hacker, is available now. And Kathy Reichs is on the line, and she joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This is very exciting to chat with you. For anyone who's not familiar with your main character, Temperance Brennan, can you just tell us a little bit about her?
She's a forensic anthropologist like myself. So she's a specialist in bones, in the human skeleton. And she works for medical examiners and coroners and with the police to help mainly do two things: to help identify unidentified remains, human remains, and also to figure out what happened to them, what was the cause or manner of death.
So can you take us through The Bone Hacker? What case is Temperance Brennan working on in this new book?
Well, she is back in Montreal. A gentleman is seen falling, being struck by lightning and falling off the Jacques Cartier Bridge. They're all out watching the fireworks, the festival, the competition for the fireworks. So she ends up having to reconstruct him and identify him. And a tattoo leads her to believe he's from the Turks and Caicos Islands. So the detective comes up from there and insists that Tempe go down to the islands, even though she says it's not necessary. So she goes to the Turks and Caicos Islands and becomes involved. They have a serial killer down there, and the serial killer is hacking off his victim's right hand or left hand, I forget which one. And while she's investigating that, she also gets involved in the investigation of some cyber crimes, some hacking. So the title, The Bone Hacker, has to do with the hacking off of these victims' hands and also cyber hacking.
So, Kathy, a lot of your books do have that connection to Montreal. And, you know, I know you lived and worked here for quite some time as a forensic anthropologist. Do you still spend a lot of time in Montreal?
I do. I'm here right now. I'm retired from teaching university and I'm retired from doing forensic casework, except if it was an extraordinary circumstance, I would be willing to help out. But I still come here as often as I can. I have many friends here and I love the city. And I need to keep current because I do set the books, at least part of most of the books, not every single one, here. So I do like to, you know, just experience the feel of the city.
Kathy, you're now retired from teaching and casework, but do you miss either of it, or do you pull that into your writing?
I do miss it. It was funny. When I was writing and teaching and working at the lab, whenever I'd, you know, have a case that I'd have to go into the lab and I'd be in the middle of writing a book, I'd think, well, I don't have time for this. I can't do this. And then if time would go by and I wouldn't get a call from the lab, I would think, well, what the heck? What's going on? Why aren't I going into the lab to do casework? So I was always torn between and enjoyed that interplay, that having a foot in two very different worlds.
No kidding. You know, your debut novel, Déjà Dead, became a New York Times bestseller, and it won the 1997 Author Ellis Award for the best first novel. How did you go from being a forensic anthropologist to start writing in the first place?
Oh, gosh, a number of things came together back in 1994. I had just finished working on a serial murder case here in Montreal, a Serge Archambault case, and it had some really interesting elements of dismemberment. I'll just leave it at that. And I also had a colleague who had at university who had just started writing fiction, and she was making a tidy little sum of money on the side. And I had three kids heading to university, and that's very expensive, private universities in the States. So I thought, well, and I also sniffed an interest in forensics in the air. It wasn't very big at that time, but I sensed that there was the beginning of this interest in forensics. So all of that kind of came together. I thought, well, maybe I can make a little bit of extra money to help with the kids' college educations. And so I decided to sit down. I used the actual case, just the core idea, just as a nugget, a central idea for the story. And then I asked myself, well, what if this and what if that and what if that? And then I spin it all off into fiction.
And then Bones, you know, your work inspiring the hit show Bones that was on the air for so many years. Did you ever in a million years expect that to happen?
No, we're still the longest running scripted drama in the history of Fox. That's 12 years is a very, very long run in Hollywood. So you just, you know, you do your pilot. Well, you have the pilot written, and then you just hope you'll get sent to, you know, actually filming it. And then once it's filmed, you just hope you'll get picked up. And then once you do get picked up, you hope you'll go for a whole first season. And then every year after that, it's, well, will we get another season? Will we get another season? So it's just, I think we had one pickup that was for two seasons. But otherwise, it's that's how Hollywood works. It's a year to year to year, unless you're The Simpsons, you know, and that goes on forever. Anyway, so yeah, it was really fun. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience in Hollywood.
Kathy, I understand you're well into your 23rd book already. How disciplined with your time do you have to be able to write the amount of books that you do? And do you ever suffer from what they call writer's block?
I don't believe in writer's block. I believe writers should find a block of time, whatever that is. You know, one day a week or all morning every day or from 2 to 5 in the afternoon. Find that block of time and be disciplined and sit down and write. Even if you don't feel like it, you can always delete it the next day, but you cannot edit a blank page. So I don't believe in writer's block. Just sit down and do it. I don't necessarily experience writer's block. I'm not always on fire with an idea, but if I get something on the page and work it and rework it, then it usually leads me in the direction that I need to be going. So I am very disciplined. I do write every day unless I'm out, you know, on book tour or I have an event or I'm, you know, with my grandkids or something. But I do try to write every day.
You're listening to Now Trending. I'm Andrea, along with Orla, and we are in conversation with number one New York Times bestselling author, Kathy Rikes. So, Kathy, for somebody who's never read your work and wants to start, should they start at the beginning or can they just sort of jump in anywhere and not worry too much about having missed a lot?
They can jump in anywhere. Every book is a self-contained story. Unless they, are very linear thinking. I'm a linear thinking person, and I like to start a series at the beginning and then, you know, work my way chronologically, but it is certainly not necessary. They could start with what might be a great idea, start with the book that's just come out, see if they like it, and then go back, you know, to the beginning of the series and work their way through.
Kathy, it's been such a pleasure meeting you and chatting with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That's number one New York Times bestselling author Kathy Rikes. Her latest book, Bone Hacker, is available now. Coming up, is the single life for you? We'll tell you about the solos movement. But first, the latest from the CTV Montreal newsroom.
Welcome back. I'm Orla alongside Andrea. Now, at some point, we've all been single, right, Andrea?
Indeed.
We've all been there. So maybe you're single now and amid the complexities of modern relationships, loneliness epidemics, and dating burnout. Well, there is an alternative and it's gaining in popularity. Going solo. Solos, as coined by our next guest, behavioral economist Dr. Peter McGraw, are people who choose to lead their lives authentically, purposely and passionately outside of the confines of traditional relationships. And he writes about this in his new book, Solo, Building a Remarkable Life on Your Own. Dr. McGraw is on the line and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Dr. McGraw.
Oh, thanks for having me. Yeah, you're right. Everybody is, was, or will be again single at some point in their life.
That's right. That's right. So let's explore this term, solos. What exactly does it mean to be a solo?
Yes. Okay. So this is really, the solo movement is really about transcending relationship status. You know, people want to know whether you're single or not so they know how to treat you. But solos are not interested in relationship status, but having this identity. And it has three characteristics. Maybe we can find out if the two of you are solos. Is that okay?
Yeah, for sure.
Fire away. Yes.
All right. So the first thing is that a solo is wholehearted. That is, they think of themselves as a complete person, not as half of a whole waiting to be filled.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's very nice, right? Because now you're not walking around less than until your person comes along. Now, solos may be welcoming their person, welcoming a relationship, welcoming romance, welcoming intimacy into their life, but it's not to fill a void. It's to add value to their life. So that's the first characteristic. The second one is that solos seek to be a good parent to themselves. That is, that they seek to solve their own problems foremost. So then again, should they have a relationship, that person is adding to their life, but not parenting them in this way.
Yeah, interesting.
And so there's a sense of autonomy, you know, and you know, for me, my sense of wholeness came in my mid to late 30s. My sense of self-reliance started early as a son of a single mom, you know, getting a job at age 13 and buying my own school clothes. And then my last bit of soloness, this third characteristic, is that solos tend to think unconventionally about relationships and about life more generally. They're willing to bend or break the rules of what we call the relationship escalator to create the kind of relationships that work best for them. That happened to me now with this project.
Interesting. Now, do you think that more people are starting to feel comfortable leaning in to being a solo?
I do, yes. I mean, first of all, the numbers are rather striking. So, you know, we're finding, at least in the United States, one out of every two adults are unmarried. And one out of two of them are not interested in dating or a relationship at the moment. These numbers are very similar in Canada. So we're seeing like a big rise in single living. And I think one of the things that is very clear is that, like, unlike when I was young and there was one bachelor on my block, and he grew weed and drove a Trans Am and everybody thought he was weird because he wasn't married. You know, we now have people who are living their best lives, living authentically as singles, whether it be that they're putting off marriage for now, whether they've decided not to remarry, whatever the reason. And so now we have role models and people are looking at it and going, oh yeah, this person is living a really remarkable life. Maybe that will work for me. I think I'll explore that.
But Dr. McGraw, you have to admit that society treats single women of a certain age much differently than they treat single men. Like, you know, that image of the bachelor can be very glamorous. But for women, it's often like, you know, they live at home with a bunch of cats kind of thing is like the way that we look at often single people. Am I wrong?
Oh, my God, Andrea, I can't believe you said that out loud.
Am I wrong?
Absolutely. You're not wrong. You are completely correct. So there's there's two sides for the bachelor, right? There's that glamorous one, and then there's the Peter Pan, the guy who won't grow up. But I think that you're absolutely right. You know, from listeners of my podcast, 2/3 of them are women, in part because women feel the pressure, they feel the pain, they feel the
right.
Is there anyone special? Questions at the holiday dinner much more often.
And that it's often, you know, you could find a very successful woman who has everything going for her and she's single for either, you know, she just hasn't had that moment where she's met that person or she's not interested in being in a relationship.
Right.
And it's like,
right.
It's always like, right. What's wrong with her? Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I agree. And I think that, the term spinster, right, has this really negative connotation. But you know what's really fascinating about the original spinsters were they were to be admired. These were women who had a valuable skill. They could leave their parents' house. They could leave their father's house. And they didn't need to enter into a husband's house in order to survive. I think that term is a positive term. It shouldn't be a pejorative. And so I like to say it might not be the case. I actually, you know, the woman that you just described, there's nothing wrong with her, but there may be something wrong with this particular style of relationship for her, whether it be for now or forever. And so what I want to do in the book is celebrate those people, male or female, and suggest that there are multiple ways to live a remarkable life. There's not just this one path that the world lays out to you.
I also think it's got a lot to do with, you know, changing times. I think as the generations are going by, it's just more acceptable to just be on your own, and that's okay. And you can be very, very happy. Do you think more people are choosing, Dr. McGraw, to remain single because it's more acceptable?
Absolutely, yes. You know, in 1960 in the United States, 90% of adults would marry on average by age 21. You know, this was something
crazy.
That people just did. They considered it. Now I think what it is people are deciding, choosing whether it's a good path for them, whether married life, family life, or single life is the right place for them at this particular stage in life. The one thing that I would say is this is not about being alone all the time. Although solos welcome their solitude and the ability to reflect and for spiritual pursuits, for creativity, to recover, but these are not people who are not connected. Singles are more involved in their community. They have greater friend groups, deeper friendships, broader friendships. And so this is about maybe not choosing this one type of romantic relationship, but it's not about being unconnected in the world. And I think that that's an important thing, is that we can get a lot of our needs met, these social needs met, through broad connections to community, friends, family of choice, and maybe the occasional lover.
Well, that's it. Okay, so listen, we only have about a minute left, but I know in your book you draw on both scientific evidence and your own personal insights to help solos lead these rich, fulfilling lives. Can you quickly just give us a couple of tips of things for people to keep in mind?
Well, I think the number one thing is that the current narrative in society that getting married makes you happy is not actually well-founded in the research. So there's some evidence that married people are slightly happier than single people, but there's no evidence that getting married makes you happy. Moreover, that difference in happiness is so small, to know whether someone is married or not married tells you almost nothing about who they are, what they like, how happy they are. And so just know that if you are living a good single life, you're living a good single life. There's no suggestion that getting married is going to change your happiness. It will change your trajectory. It'll change what it might be meaningful to you, but it's not going to change your satisfaction with your life in the way that the advocates for getting married suggest that it does.
Dr. McGraw, your book sounds amazing. Again, I'm sure you can buy it on Amazon or anywhere else where, you know, any bookstore. It's called Solo, Building a Remarkable Life on Your Own. Dr. McGraw, thank you so much for joining us.
Cheers.
That's behavioral economist Dr. Peter McGraw coming up. An easy TikTok theory that offers a cure for the living room blahs. But first, let's take a look at the roads.
Welcome back. Happy Sunday afternoon. I'm Andrea and there's Orla. So, Lovey, I know you are in the process of moving, which is obviously a big undertaking. How's that going?
I am like the packing bunny right now. I'm mastering packing. I've got all my ducks in a row with my tape and my pens. Don't touch my tape or my pens, eh?
You're going to be hearing
I have
that
a system going.
You're going to be hearing that tape wheel for months to come.
I know.
Well, listen, I'm sure that your decor is all sorted in your new home. However, if you are looking for a little bit of inspiration, there's a viral TikTok theory that is taking off. It's called Unexpected Red. Yeah. So basically, this TikToker, I don't know if that's the right word, a woman on TikTok by the name of Taylor Migliazu Simon has posted that basically if your living room is like looking drab or your bedroom is a bit blah, your bathroom, whatever, You need a little touch of panache? Try adding something red. And now it's just as simple as this. Apparently, it's the unexpected red theory, she's calling it, in a video that's been seen over a million times, is basically adding anything that is red, big or small, to a room where it doesn't match at all. And apparently this will make your room look automatically better. And then she goes on to show the color red in rooms like where it wouldn't match, including a mostly green bathroom with a pair of red sinks. That doesn't sound appealing to me. But anyways.
Good Lord.
And she's petitioning to make red a neutral color. So apparently if you just put a pop of red into a room where it wouldn't... I don't know. I don't know if I like...
So listen, I have red shoes, I have red bags, I have red dresses. I love red. Red, pink, they're my favorite colors, and black. We have a designer doing our house, and the first thing he said is, if your favorite color is red, forget it. I don't work with red.
Oh, interesting.
He does not put anything red.
Well, you're going to have to take the unexpected red TikTok theory here, and you're going to have to give it to Antonio the designer.
He's going to kill me.
But it's so interesting. Like, I'm very like everything in our house is gray. It's not like I feel like I need some unexpected red. Anytime we do anything, I'm like, I gravitate towards the grays, and then I beat myself up over gravitating towards the grays. And then I'm like, no, listen, if I love it, I love it. Or white. White and gray like that. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I know it's probably boring, but maybe I'll try getting some unexpected red and see what Mike says, if he even notices.
Yeah, exactly. The only thing that's red that comes into our house is red roses.
Oh.
Yes, that's it. My red shoes, my red bag.
But you and I both love a red nail. Like 9 times out of 10, we both have red on our nails. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Something else that caught my eye this week. There was a piece of the New York Times about voice notes. You know, and if you're like, you're going to send somebody a text, but instead you send them a voice memo. How do you feel about this? If I were to send you a voice note, what do you think when you immediately see that come in?
She has to be driving, or she's busy, and maybe she's getting her nails done, and Andrea needs to tell me something urgently.
Okay. But like, are you annoyed by it that you have to listen to it?
No. I just think the person's in a bit of a hurry. They want to give me a message, and it's easier for them to click on it and do a voice note. The thing is, I try and click on that thing, and that thing doesn't work for me.
But do you have a friend, or do you know someone who just loves to send the voice notes? Because I know.
Yes.
I have one. Yeah.
I do as well.
And? Yeah.
My hairdresser, Maggie Saman, because she's based in Dubai, she sends voice notes. This girl is very, very busy. But I love hearing her voice because I miss Maggie.
Oh, well, that's nice. That's very warming. See, I have the opposite effect. Like, I also have that person. And when the voice note comes in, I'm like, oh, my God. Because, you can't listen to it everywhere. And you don't. And then I always feel like I need to send a voice memo back, right?
Oh,
because
okay.
Then if I'm typing... I don't know. Like, what's the protocol? Anyways.
Well, the thing is as well, I've sent endless voice notes that probably has got a load of garbage on it going to wherever.
Lovey, you just cut out. Do you want to say that again?
Oh, I did? Yeah. Okay. Well, the problem I find with voicemates. Well, the problem I find with voice notes is I accidentally do voice notes, and then I end up sending them with like absolute garbage on them.
It's the worst. It's the worst. I know. I'm so, or it's like the pocket dial. It's like the modern day pocket dial. Although I have to say, my father still pocket dials me in this day and age, and I don't know. Like, how is it possible that he's pocket dialed? It's like something you did before, you know, before the iPhones existed.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we did a segment on how we should ditch our iPhones and get a flip phone?
Yep.
You know how many people have checked in with me to see if I went and bought the flip phone yet?
Oh my God. Are you close to doing it?
No.
No.
No. I mean, it was so cool to flip that up and flip that down. It was so cool. But no, there is just, we're too used to high tech functioning right now.
Do you remember the Razr? The Motorola Razr phone?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I had one of those.
That was the cool flip phone. That was the coolest. Yes. Or the Oh my God, there was another one. By it was like,
and then if you wanted to hang up on somebody, you just like flip.
It was so satisfying. Oh my God, those were the good old days.
Those were the days. Well, thank you so much for spending part of your Sunday with us. We'll be back at the same time next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Now Trending Show. Have a fabulous week.